This is the Airplane Geeks Podcast. Our aim is to educate and inform you, explore and expand your passion for aviation, and entertain you a little along the way. I'm Max Flight. This is a special episode recorded live on the deck of Sun and Fun Radio on April 14th, 2021. It's the second time we recorded an episode of the Airplane Geeks Podcast at the Sun and Fun Aerospace Expo. This time, reporter-at-large Launchpad Merzari joined me and our guest, Lieutenant Colonel Trevor Boswell, callsign Boat, to talk about the North American Aerospace Defense Command, or NORAD, and the interception of civil aircraft flying in TFRs or other unauthorized airspace. We also announced the four winners of our plane tags giveaway. Okay, let's go to the deck of Sun and Fun Radio.
We're live at Sun and Fun 2021. If you listen to the show, you know how this rolls. Our aim is to educate and inform you, explore and expand your passion for aviation, and entertain you a little along the way. I'm Max Flight. With me is our reporter at large, Launchpad Merzari.
Hey, Max, and to all the ships at sea and planes in the air, within the sound of my voice, I'm just beyond happy to be here.
I'm especially happy that you flew in here in your Focke-Wulf, which we went over and took a look at it the other day, and what a beautiful paint job, beautiful aircraft.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it was a big, long trip for us to come in, but I was happy to bring it in, and Sun and Fun let us, we're displaying it out on the Warbird line, and in fact, I got kind of a premium position, which was more because I came in first thing Monday morning, right after the weather had shut everybody down. But it caused me to be right on the front line of everything. And it's the first time I've gotten to fly into Sun and Fun. So I got the commemorative hat, not being a poser. I got the hat that says I flew into Sun and Fun.
And you came in from Texas.
Correct. And we had, real quick, we came from Texas. It was about a seven and a half hour flight, which would have been the same time if I'd flown commercial, dig on the commercials. A little bit more expensive, but we flew all the way in, and we had a 40-knot tailwind. So I was doing, for our airplane geeks, because let's get geeky, I was doing 120 indicated at 9,000 feet, which gives my true airspeed at 184, which means my ground speed was 174 knots, which means in converting that to miles per hour, that's 204 miles per hour. Ying!
Very nice. You had a little bit of weather to contend with.
Sunday night was, as I was coming in, there was a thunderstorm system that was supposed to continue blowing out, and it just stopped over Lakeland. And they had horrible weather here, and we were trying to pick our way through it, and literally, I listened to the ATIS, and they're still, okay, runway 9 is still open, and I switched frequencies back to the tower and said, I have, information, papa, here I am, I'm ready to land. And they said, we just went IFR, information, Victor is in charge. And I'm like, wait a second, it was 10 seconds, I just pushed the button. Yeah, and they were like, no, go away. So we went over to Zephyr Hills, landed and took a hotel for the night. And then Monday morning, I just
quick hop in. Excellent, excellent. Well, glad it's good to see you in person, because that doesn't happen very often. Of course, when you produce podcasts, everything's over the internet, and people that sound like they're in the same room are often thousands of miles apart.
I'm more handsome in real life than I am in Zoom.
I guess so. All right. Well, hey, Launchpad, we have a pretty exciting guest joining us here on the front porch, front patio of front deck, I should say, of the Sun and Fun Radio.
Right. We've got with us Lieutenant Colonel Trevor Boswell, call sign Boat, from the North American Air Defense Command.
Well, thanks so much for having me, gentlemen. It's great to be here.
And you're here with NORAD. Well, let's start with that for a moment. NORAD is North American Air Defense Command. Now, you're not part of a combat command.
That's correct.
You're a, what are you guys again, NORAD?
We're a direct reporting unit, and so we work tangentially with NORTHCOM, and just happens to be that our commander, the NORAD commander, is also the NORTHCOM commander. He wears two hats, as we like to say. And so what that does for us is it gives us a lot of extra resources and everything to do the mission. But, you know, generally speaking, we're our own separate mission to defend, continental United States, Canada, and Alaska.
Right. And because we do a little, to get geeky, that means you have your own separate funding. You don't go through NORTHCOM and you report directly, almost as if you were a combatant command.
Correct.
Because you go straight to the SecDef.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. So now that we've established what NORAD does, and everybody remembers NORAD, North American Air Defense, you do the famous Track Santa for...
Absolutely. Every year.
For what, 50, 60 years?
It's been a minute, yeah, for sure. Yeah, he's a good friend of ours, and we like to make sure that we give him all the clearance he needs to do his job safely, but we still expect him to follow the rules just like all the other pilots out there as well.
You know, it's really pretty interesting, I think, that you have an organization that's so serious as NORAD, but also can do something kind of whimsical and fun and something that is terrific for the kids, too.
It is, yeah. Here at the booth, we've had plenty of kids come by. We've got some handouts for them, and it's great to see them. And, you know, it's April, so it's not exactly Christmas season, but it's nice to see their eyes light up. And we're sorry, parents, if we triggered more present requests, but, it's great to be able to connect with the general population on the whole.
Okay, well, that's an interesting stepping stone. So we have the North American Air Defense Command, say it in the correct voice. But why are you at Sun and Fun?
Well, yeah, so obviously we're tasked with defending North America, Canada, Alaska, and all the continental 48 U.S. states. But we also have a more pointed purpose here at Sun and Fun to talk to the general aviation population, and I'm in charge of the civilian aviation and education and training program. And that whole outreach program is to talk face-to-face with the pilots and make sure that we are prepping them through all phases of flight for success, hopefully to avoid an intercept, but if the worst case does come and happen, that we can help them navigate that to a successful landing and hopefully de-escalate the situation at the end there.
Okay, and to that extent, you've got, I want to call them a handout, but it actually is set so it'll fit inside my checklist.
Yeah, yeah, we call them kneeboard cards, basically.
Kneeboard cards.
And they're two-sided, and they have all the rules for here's what you do in the flight planning phase, and that's where we like to start our mantra of, check the NOTAMs, basically. Be aware, be knowledgeable on what is or is not allowed in the airspace that you're planning on traveling to or through, and then the procedures to successfully file a clearance associated with that and navigate through the airspace real time with air traffic control. And then from there, you can continue along the card. And again, it's kind of steps its way through the process from start to finish of, let's avoid an intercept if possible through flight planning. And then if the worst does come, then how to interact with the fighter aircraft or the helicopter that may have intercepted you, and then follow them to a successful resolution.
So do you find that very many pilots are not aware of their responsibilities to plan appropriately?
I think we like to leave it up to them. I think we do a little bit of trust that they are doing what they are certificated to do, right? So the expectation as a certificated pilot is that you're going to follow all the FARs and the AIM to do everything you're supposed to do. And it's kind of an on-your-honor system, right? You want to make sure that pre-flight planning, you're checking the weather, you're checking the NOTAMs. And we have all that kind of information at www.norad.mil/general aviation. And that's a good starting point. And those cards, you can print those off yourself if you're not here local at Sun and Fun this week. You can go find that information there as well. And that'll talk you again through all the steps to be successful. But yeah, we don't really try to push into individual pilots' pre-flight habits. We just try to reinforce the good habits.
Right, right. And so NORAD is not... inspecting or monitoring pilots' good compliance. NORAD is reacting when they don't comply the way they should. Is that a way to say it?
Yeah, that's we in the Air Force, and I'm sure around the rest of the world, do root cause analysis, and we're trying to find what is the biggest limiting factor for success when it comes to flying. And we found that over time, the more we reach out, the more we talk to general aviation pilots, the more educating we do, the more training we do, That seems to have helped reduce the number of intercepts that we've had to execute real time. And that's the cost savings to the taxpayer. You know, we estimate it's around $100,000 every single time an intercept occurs. And so if we can cut those out, we're saving the taxpayers' dollars left, right, and center. So that's what we're trying to reach out here to do, in addition to just safe flying.
Well, as a training and outreach program, this is a little different than the normal Air Force training syllabuses, because now you're doing outreach as opposed to doing normal in the military, mandatory, everyone will show up.
Correct.
How long has NORAD been doing this kind of outreach?
I think in general, there's always a line you can call. There's always a phone number you can call and reach out. So that's kind of the receiving, us asking for them to contact us. And for the outreach piece, probably the last about 15 years, give or take. And it was really a response, as everybody's aware, September 11th, 2001 was a pretty significant emotional event in American history and around the world, for that matter, as well. And so in response to that, we started this more codified rules of engagement with civilian and military and working that coordination piece. And it's just kind of evolved over time. And this is just another level of that.
Right, because I remember AOPA had, because it wasn't on the FARs. It's somewhere buried in there about what the procedure is for, if you're intercept. But like, it wasn't a question that you got asked during your private pilot or your BFR.
Yep.
So it was like, what do you do if it comes up next to you? You're like, I don't know, wave.
Hope and pray. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so this, the whole idea is we're trying to help pilots be smarter when they walk out the door and go fly so that they can avoid these things and it never be a factor. And we hope that you never have to use any of the intercept information and any of the procedures that are associated with that. But just in the off chance, you can print off the card or pick one up from the booth here. We're in Hangar A. And come on by, grab that, and you've got those ready to go just in case you need it.
And you've got some other swag. You've got stickers and...
Got some stickers. We got some notepads. We got all kinds of fun stuff. Yeah, come on over.
That's great. That's great. So let's talk a little bit more in detail about the intercept process.
Sure.
Starting out maybe from the pilot's perspective, how do you know that, you've triggered an intercept?
Well, the hope, I guess, obviously, is that you're not there. But if you do find yourself in a situation like that, hopefully you've been monitoring the guard frequency, 121.5, and you've been receiving radio calls, probably ever more intense from air traffic control as you're approaching a TFR. And a TFR is typically about a 30 mile ring around the center point for the kind of the initial phase, and then there's a 10 mile ring inside of that as well. And so the whole point there is air traffic control is going to try to get you to not go in the 30-mile ring. If you somehow trespass that ring, they're going to do an assessment based off of what direction of travel you're going, how fast you're going, what altitude you're at. And again, we don't know what anybody is doing out there unless it's on a flight plan. And then if they're inside of a TFR, they've probably not gone in accordance with their flight plan. So now we're a little, apprehensive of intentions. And again, 9/11 is a good example of, not expecting something and then something bad happens. So we start to, hairs in the back of the neck go up for that air traffic controller, and then they'll start working through their sequence of events. And eventually, if you continue to look threatening to whatever the center point of that is, then they'll potentially scramble fighters or a Coast Guard helicopter or whatnot.
All right. Now, ADS-B has come out. We're all supposed to be squawking ADS-B. Has that helped with the at least identifying the targets?
Yeah, sure. It definitely, it gives awareness as to what, potentially it is, what the tail number is, what they can expect to see as a fighter aircraft or a helicopter intercepting that aircraft. But in terms of intentions of the pilot in command, we still don't know.
As the air traffic control is sending increasingly important messages to the pilot.
Yes.
Does NORAD get a heads up of a potential issue here, or does it wait until that plane crosses a certain line, if you will?
Again, the rules of engagement, like I spoke to earlier, air traffic control and NORAD are overseeing air traffic control, the local area, NORAD, the entire airspace. Mm. And so there is coordination going on real time. We are monitoring radio frequencies. They are, doing their behind-the-scenes coordination. So when you're talking on a radio frequency, they may not respond to you. They're on the phone. They're doing a lot of things. The air traffic controller is. That's maybe some of the stuff that is going on if they're dealing with the situation that we're kind of describing here. So
right. figuring out if he launched out of this airport, he may still be on the local.
Correct.
Let's call him back on, KUXB's home airport frequency and see if he's monitoring that.
Correct.
Okay. Now, you may, because I mentioned ADS-B, you guys aren't ADS-B when you're doing these intercepts, right? So you won't show up on our squawk boxes.
Yeah, more than likely not. And frankly, more than likely, we're going to come up from behind you to try to keep you in front of us, if you will. And so what you're going to expect, especially if it's a fighter aircraft, if you're in the Washington, D.C. area, there's some slight different platforms that you may encounter out there, but the traditional aircraft is going to be a fighter aircraft. So F-16s, F-15s, or F-22s if you're up in Alaska. Hmm. And depending on your flight profile, what you're flying, all those things, you may be going pretty slow. And just because you're going slow doesn't mean that we can't go slow. And just remember, there's at least two of us hanging around somewhere by you.
Yeah. Right, because I've been reading through these, and normally the first indication is you do a sweep in front of them at your speeds.
Correct.
Because now you're an F-16 driver.
Yes, sir.
So, for you, what's that indicated? You're doing what, 350?
We typically work in calibrated, but yeah, somewhere in the, probably in the vicinity of 350, 400 knots just to get to the we call them targets of interest.
Right.
So the target aircraft at that point.
Right. But the target aircraft is putzing around it, like me, I'm at 120 indicated, which would be, as we just said, 134 true.
Yep.
That's a significant speed difference.
It is. So that first pass, like you said, we're going to be rocking our wings. We're going to try to get some attention out of you. And hopefully that will be the first thing that clues you in. Hopefully, not really the first thing, the last thing that clues you in that something bad's going on, right? You're not where you're supposed to be. And you'll start talking to air traffic control on guard or whatever local frequency you're on. And then from there, just remember, like I said, there's two of us. So there's somebody hanging out behind you, and the next guy's going to come in, wag their wings, do hand signals. Some aircraft have lights on the side of them, depending on what country you're in. They're going to do some maneuvers out there. And again, it's all explained in the cards, but there could even be flares expended if you're not paying attention to the visual non-expansion stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I imagine different pilots may react differently to all this drama taking place in front of them.
It's definitely going to be a significant emotional event, as we like to say.
Yep.
And it will definitely cause some alarm, I guess, is probably a good way to put it.
Well, it gets your attention for sure.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering, but all the every pilot responds in a rational manner, or does some freak out, and panic and freeze.
Well, from a personal experience, from something I've never been intercepted, but your first thought is, cool. Oh wait, why is he here?
Yeah,
it's a really good personal air show, and it's probably the last one you'll ever get if you're acting
dumb.
Bad, I guess.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll come back in just a second and talk about some of the aircraft that perform these interceptions. Again, you're listening to the Airplane Geeks podcast live at Sun and Fun, and we're speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Bo Boswell from NORAD. And we were talking about intercepts and the aircraft that may perform those intercepts. And you mentioned F-16s, F-22s in Alaska. That would be my personal favorite. Or the Coast Guard, if that's relevant.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about the aircraft, and where are they positioned? Are they pre-positioned in certain areas, or do we just have blanket coverage across the country, and so at moment's notice anyone could launch?
Yeah, well, I mean, ideally, obviously, you'd like aircrafts within, 10 minutes of every place, but that's not financially responsible, and it's not really feasible with the force structure that we have currently. So, like I said, we have F-16s, F-15s here in the continental United States. We have Canadian CF-18s in Canada, and then we have F-22s up in Alaska. Kind of hidden behind the scenes, you have the tanker structure as well that supports them, that allows them to continue on longer type of intercept missions, and those are pre-positioned around the country as well. So in terms of fighter bases and the alert facilities, Launchpad, what you got?
And for our listeners, don't panic. We're not going to talk about tankers live on the radio.
Yeah, a little inside joke.
But that being said, we've got, if you can imagine, we're kind of trying to build a a fortress around North America. So you've got them around kind of the coast, the southern portions of the United States, and then a few located within the middle of the country as well. Aurora, Colorado, Buckley Air Force Base, Duluth Air National Guard in Minnesota, and then, Alaska in Anchorage. And then Canada, there's two normal positions and a couple of expansion positions available.
And these aircraft are not specifically dedicated to this intercept mission, right? These are just the, is that correct? These are just a general?
Yes and no. So okay. These are all combat capable aircraft, and they could be deployed anywhere in the world at any time as needed, but they are tasked specifically for NORAD support. And so it then becomes the unit's responsibility to determine which combat aircraft of that type are on alert at all times.
Understood. And so the pilots of those aircraft get additional training specifically for this mission?
They do, yeah. They go through their normal upgrade training to become an alert qualified pilot. And then we have recurrent training that happens just like in the airlines or anywhere else on a regular basis, in addition to their normal military qualifications that they also have to maintain.
So when the call comes to perform an intercept, for the pilots, is it kind of an adrenaline rush? You know, we get to go up and perform a mission that's not a training mission?
Yeah, so, you know, just like I was saying with air traffic control, they don't know what that target is. Neither do the people on the ground that are about to jump into airplanes and go intercept them. So the klaxon goes off, the traditional red siren and everything, you know, all that good stuff, just like in the movies. They rush out there. They jump in the airplanes. We've got dedicated maintenance personnel that are getting those airplanes ready to go. They also spring into action and prepare the airplanes for a quick launch. And then that response time is all classified, but it is very, very quick. And we try to get off the ground as quickly as possible to get going in the direction of travel. And I know off air we were talking about supersonic capability and everything. All the aircraft are supersonic capable. They try not to go supersonic unless it's absolutely necessary. But if it is necessary, then they can execute that if required.
Because you break a lot of windows.
It's good for insurance companies. We'll call it that.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
And I want to give the threat, you know. And behind that, there are staff weenies who, you know, because suddenly we've had to launch the alert fighters from here, they're suddenly figuring out, okay, what tanker assets do we already have in the air, or what tanker assets do we have alert to, and then computing fuel burns and how long, you know, are we going to be able to recover the alert aircraft, or are we going to have to tank them up?
Correct. Yes. So they'll make that determination based off of what they assess the, you know, target aircraft to be, where it is located, how far away it is. And again, we have multiple sets of alert fighters up and down the coasts and along the southern border in Canada, and then in Anchorage as well. And so they may hand off between aircraft as between one alert unit and another. So that may also then require some additional coordination to pass that target aircraft off if it's, you know, at the outer limits and we can't get a tanker there in time. They coordinate with the divert fields available to them and all that kind of stuff. So there is a lot, like you said, behind the scenes that we need to coordinate real time.
Let's hear it for the staff weenies.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm not sure they'd appreciate being called weenies, but...
Oh, I don't know. It's
team members or something.
It is one big team. I mean, the maintenance people to keep the airplanes ready to go all the time, 24/7. It's a big deal. The aircraft are loaded up with live weapons, so again, that, you know, they've got the munitions folks that are taking care of that as well. I mean, it is a full team effort.
And are you able to say anything about the frequency with which intercepts occur?
It's tough to track the number of, you know, we can break it down and everything, but I can say that, you know, this outreach program that we've been accomplishing has helped drop that number down. And so, you know, in the realm, we'll call it of, you know, maybe 25 to 35 a year, a very ballpark number without the number sitting here in front of me. But but it is, you know, it does still happen, and that's why we're still out here doing it.
And to the point that you made previously, maybe a couple of times, is you never know what the intent is.
Correct.
And, you know, whether it's one or two or 50 or 500 a year is almost irrelevant, because any one of those could be the big one.
It only takes one.
It only takes one.
And that's what we saw, obviously, back in September 11th, 2001.
Yeah.
And there are a number of times, though, where, let's say, someone calls and it goes down through the decision tree.
Mm-hmm.
They decide, okay, launch the alert. But then, you know, you guys are still beating feet to there, and suddenly they come back and say, oh, he finally squawked, you know, And he's turned, and we've turned him around just before he broke the air, or you know, right afterwards. And then you have several of those, and
definitely
that does that. And that doesn't count as an intercept, right? That counts as an incident.
And this is getting into the semantics, I guess, if you want to call it that. But yes, there are times where we will launch fighters, and then the aircraft that they had intended to go intercept starts doing what they should be, or starts communicating with air traffic control properly, etc. And so we try to wait as long as we possibly can. But again, that it does happen. It does happen.
It's interesting stuff. I keep thinking about the pilot, you know, in a private plane, a small plane.
Well, there have been famous ones like the 152 in the early 2003, 2005, the 152 that went through the TFR in D.C., and that didn't turn out. Nobody got covered in glory in that one. Mm-hmm. Not the intercept people, not the pilot, not the aero club he was renting from, who, you know, everybody dorked that up. And if you remember, that was, I think, the first time for the Air Force they tried to do an intercept of a GA airplane, and the first F-16, he came down and kept slowing it, and suddenly he departed and had to, you know, correct it. You know, once he departed, it suddenly his priorities changed immediately.
Correct. Yeah.
And he ended up going to burner to save the airplane and not cause an incident, which set off every, you know, car alarm in the greater D.C. area. And their AOPA did a great interview of both sets of pilots on that.
Uh-huh.
But I think that was that almost like the genesis of the outreach?
I think it's kind of, yeah, genesis, if you want to call it that. You know, it's just trying to fuse all of the different aspects of the program, the rules of engagement and everything together. And again, that root cause analysis, trying to stop it at the outset.
Right.
Right. By flight planning properly, doing the basic stuff, checking the NOTAMs, talking to air traffic control, and being knowledgeable on what you're about to go do. Because flying is a serious business, and you can find yourself in a bad situation very, very quickly. And so we want to try to give us as much time ahead of the airplane as we possibly can by informing us before we start going flying.
So are you getting a good response here at Sun and Fun from the pilots?
Yeah, we absolutely have. We absolutely have. It's been amazing. The outreach is great. We love interacting with everybody, and we look forward to more of it the rest of the show.
Yeah, great. Well, coming up, we'd like to talk about Bo's other job, perhaps, because that's kind of interesting, and also some Bo's background in terms of his career path to get to this position.
And we've got the giveaway. We're going to announce our winners.
That's right. That's right. We've had a giveaway that's been a really popular one. We've got some plane tags. We'll explain all of that. But we do have the four winners of our plane tags giveaway. We'll be announcing those in short order. And as I said, we got a huge response, so we really appreciate that. But before all that, we're going to take a quick break. Welcome back. You're listening to the Airplane Geeks podcast, live at Sun and Fun Radio. And we're speaking with our guest this episode. That's Lieutenant Colonel Bo Boswell. And just let me mention really quick that if you're interested in the subscribing to or listening to the podcast, you can find us at airplanegeeks.com. Of course, because it's a podcast, you can find us anywhere you find podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or any of the podcast apps. But back to Bo, and I had one follow-up question that I've been wondering if, when we talk about the aircraft that are used for intercepts, are there any unmanned aircraft that are ever used in this context, or is that something that we can't talk about?
No, there's nothing.
Okay.
Yeah, so short answer, sweet answer, there's nothing.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, fine. Let's talk about your other aviation career.
Sure.
And you fly commercially.
I do. As you guys affectionately call it, I apparently Acme Airlines.
Acme Airlines.
So I fly commercially on my day job, as I like to call it. So I am actually a member of the Air Force Reserves. So I'm a part-timer, an IMA, or an individual military augmentee, which means that I'm attached to a active duty organization, NORAD, and I work for them. And so I was a previous active duty member myself. I flew F-16s, like we covered, for about 12 and a half years. And then I left active duty and joined the Air Force Reserves and was anticipating staying full-time as an Air Reserve Technician, or a GS-13. And that got kind of sidetracked, if you will, as life often does. And about 2 months into my stint in the Air Force Reserves, I was offered an opportunity to fly for the airlines, and I jumped onto it, and here I am now.
And what aircraft do you fly?
Well, I'm actually in the middle between two aircraft. Previously, I was on the Airbus 320 as a first officer, and I'm transitioning to the first officer side in the Boeing 737.
737. So on the 320, 320 Neos or...
So my airline doesn't have any quite yet. Yeah. I believe that is on the horizon. And obviously with COVID and all the chaos, I guess, that's kind of caused everybody's plans to change. That's changed our plans as well. But that is on the horizon. And but I did fly 319s, 320s, and 321s, all the conventional engine option.
Now, you're going to 737. Is that because everybody knows it? Are you going to Maxes?
No, not Maxes, just the 800 and the 900.
Okay, because Acme isn't flying the Maxes. Now, based on that, though, were you furloughed and during COVID?
No, I've been with the airline for almost four and a half years, and so I've been fortunate enough to be safe through all the different changes of staffing and all the different projections and whatnot.
Now, one of the things through that I've talked to several airline pilots, and I, there's Acme and Ajax Airlines. They're doing complete recalls of all their pilots, and what they're having problems with is that everybody's out of currency. So the guys who are in fact, we were supposed to have some other guests here, and that were their current, and they bid for only 4 days this month.
Yeah.
And they got told, no, you're flying the whole month because they're having to cover because no one else is current.
Yeah.
Of all the furloughs they've had, they're calling them all back, but nobody's current.
Yeah, and I'm relatively new into the commercial aviation industry, but it has been interesting to see the last year all the different approaches that airlines have chosen to take with their employees of all different, shapes and sizes. But for us, I have flown a full schedule the entire time. We have not furloughed anybody. And we have, I think, officially now gotten everybody back on property, as we like to call it, and assigned to a aircraft category. But again, landing currency or training, because pilots have shifted to different airplanes. They're not qualified or current in those, and so on and so forth. So training is a challenge with all the build back up, if you will.
Now, you're not allowed to speak for Acme Airlines, but have you seen the fact that the, let's call it, ops tempo with Acme picking up because of right now a shortage of the right pilots in the right skill sets in the right blocks?
I think I get what you're trying to say. So one of the challenges, again, is the currency piece. The other piece is the FAA mandated 48-hour sit down from receiving your COVID vaccine, and so that's a challenge that we're trying to navigate. And it's the curse of we want to do the right thing by the general population and be vaccinated and try to get through COVID. But at the same time, we still have a business to run. And so how do you balance the two? It's really a challenge.
There's some significant differences between the Airbus and the Boeing aircraft.
Definitely there are.
Definitely some big differences. And in fact, a lot of the Boeing pilots will sort of diss the A320 family and vice versa with the 737s, usually in a jovial kind of way, but sometimes a little more. But they do fly differently. They feel differently. Are you excited about that transition, or
it's mixed? Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll be honest. It's a mixed opinion. I'm going to miss the tray table. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
That's a nice little feature they got there. And flying F-16s previously, Airbus flies with a side stick.
Right.
Basically flying an F-16 with one too many engines. But other than that, I am excited about the new challenge. And my father was in the airline industry, and he flew 737. So he gives me a little friendly ribbing on that front as well.
Will this change what line? Do you know where you're going to – what legs you're going to bid for?
I up to this point, I've commuted for a fair large portion of my career. And so this is, really the first time that I'm going to bid from living in base, as we call it. And so I don't know yet. I haven't got that far in the planning process. Yeah.
Well, now I want to switch real quick, and we've talked about it. When were you commissioned and from where?
So I graduated with my bachelor's degree in architecture, actually, from the University of Colorado in Boulder. That's right.
I graduated from CSU down in Pueblo, so
yeah,
we're almost alumni together.
That's right. So I graduated December of 2003. I did ROTC my entire time there and went straight from that right into pilot training and went through the training program at that time, flying T-37s, T-38s, and then eventually the F-16.
Were you interested in flying before then?
I always had a tangential interest. My dad flew commercially. Right, right. He owns his own aircraft, and I've flown in that with him. And
what does he have?
He has a Glassair 2.
Yeah?
And so I can remember the crate showing up when he first bought it in the driveway, and it looked like a monstrosity then. And, you know, like all privately owned airplanes, you know, it takes its toll on the wallet and the time and everything else, but it's a labor of love, and he's still doing it to this day. But
he still
flies? He does. Yeah. Not for the airlines, but for his airplane, yeah. And when it's working. Well, I'll caveat that with when it's working.
Okay.
It's a sore spot with him right now, actually. But that being said, so I've always had an interest in aviation. I never was driven to that's the one thing in life that I want to do, I guess is probably the best way to put it.
Yeah, yeah. And so architecture.
Exactly right. That's case in point. I thought I was going to go do civil engineering, and then I didn't like that as much, but architecture was pretty darn close. And then, college, by the time I did get to the I want to fly, college kind of became a means to an end, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. So you were in ROTC the whole time?
The whole time, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. When you're in a program like that, what's the sort of the mood of the people in the ROTC program? I mean, are they super driven? Or are they just kind of enjoying life?
You get all kinds of,
You were post 9/11 ROTC.
I was over top of 9/11. 9/11 happened right in the middle. So I began college in 1999. Man, that's a long time ago. So I was I was a junior when 9/11 happened. And so that was, obviously an eye-opening experience for everybody. I can still remember it happened. I'm sure most people can remember when and where they were at the time. But, it was definitely a shock to the system, and it definitely was a big event, and everybody knows where they were.
Yeah, I think that had an influence on, obviously not only the aviation industry and security and all that, but on everybody in many different ways.
Yeah.
And, yeah, for sure, aviation is not the same since then. In many ways, it's a shame. You don't have the opportunities to do plane spotting in some areas the way you used to.
Uh-huh.
Some airports that used to have observation decks that you could sit there for just hours and just watch the planes.
That's right.
Come in.
Yeah, this is a pretty good setup we got right here. It's pretty awesome.
That's right. So
we're going to talk about that when we come back from commercial.
Okay, well, we can do that, and we'll take a quick break in just a few minutes, and then we've got some other exciting things that we want to talk. We mentioned our plane tags giveaway that's coming up. I also want to talk about Launchpad's Focke-Wulf a little bit, but we'll have that coming in the future. And welcome back to the Airplane Geeks Podcast, live on Sun and Fun Radio.
Yep, 1510 on your AM dial, and there's no post-editing or fixing on this one. We're doing it live. Now, since we're doing it live, Lieutenant Colonel Boswell, welcome to Sun and Fun. This is your first time at a real air show.
Yes, that is in fact true. Yeah, I've never been to this one. It is pretty impressive.
What are your impressions?
I didn't have a lot of expectations coming in, and to just walk the aisles and aisles of airplanes to see all the vendors, all the people. I mean, obviously we're having a little bit of COVID relief, if you will. First time that a big air show is coming back since COVID shut everything down. And so you a lot of smiling faces and a lot of happy people. It's been awesome.
Have you been able to get away from the booth and walk out to the Warbird line or to the experiment line or the vintage line or the classic line or the...
I know. It is just a never-ending list of things, and it is impressive. Yeah, I've walked through all the hangars. I've walked the through the whole event area, if you will, and you just see one new thing after another after another. It's amazing.
Because, and for instance, you haven't even been out to Paradise City to see the light sports.
I have not. And apparently, I think you have an airplane here that's there?
Right. Pipistrel's out there. Come on out. I'll put you in an electric Taurus, a fully electric glider that we've been delivering.
Cool. Yeah, very cool. I look forward to it.
You know, this is my second Sun and Fun. And the first one that I attended in 2019, the thing that I learned about this event is that previously I had thought about this as being a one-week air show, and that's it. And I didn't fully appreciate that this is a campus that lives 24/7, 12 months out of the year, and offers educational opportunities and the museum and the high school and all of that. Just from up in Connecticut, I wasn't aware of any of that. So that was the big eye opener in 2019. This year, I also learned something additional. In terms of the workshops, I had not run across the workshops previously when I visited. And so it's been really interesting and exciting to go through them and look at, how do you wrap fabric, how do you build propellers, and there's a variety of different skill sets that many of the listeners, people listening are aware of, but... it was just all new to me. I didn't know that all that was going on.
Right, and the vendors also, it's not just, how do you build a propeller, how do you pull a rivet on a thing, but some of the vendors will have unique to, Lycoming had a class scheduled, which was for those of us who have Lycoming engines on, maintenance of Lycomings. There are just a lot of classes going out there. That's someplace else Lieutenant Colonel Boswell hasn't been to yet.
It's true.
Any
that
of the
true.
Educational things.
That's right. With our outreach program, we go and do briefings and whatnot around the campus. And so we are out and about. But, yeah, it's hard to run the booth and provide the outreach and still participate in all the action.
You have to play hooky to leave
that's
your
right.
booth.
That's right.
As I say. And one of the other things that I want your impression on is notice the booths all closed an hour ago. And notice what's going on right now.
Yeah, it's a party. It's a party. Yeah. I mean, everybody's happy. You got smiles every place. Everybody's, friendly. They're all still here. I mean, that's the crazy thing. They're all still here. They haven't left yet. And granted, tonight, it's a little bit of a difference where we have a night air show and there's a little bit later of events and whatnot. But, I mean, even last night, first night of the air show, people were hanging around, and it wasn't like they just vacated at 5 p.m. They were all hanging around, milling about. Yeah.
Right, and in fact, let's call out your wingman who just said, later boat, I'm going out to he's going out to Warbirds because there's a beer thing going on out there. And they tend to he was going to be your wingman and help you, but, where is he right now?
He's getting beers. Yeah, he's doing what he should do. Enjoy the atmosphere, the ambiance, and enjoy the show. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what I want. And, you're impressed. Have you noticed that there's an FAA, the FISDO is here, the FAA and the FISDO are located right on the campus.
Yep.
And you can go directly into them and ask very specific questions.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's a great resource.
I wanted to kind of poke, Lieutenant Colonel Boswell here more about, so you haven't gotten really to walk out and walk around any of this stuff yet?
Well, no, I've done. I've done some, trolling back and forth and intermingling with some of the booths and the airplane hosts and whatnot and that kind of thing. But, once we're finished up here, I'm going to go out and see what I can find. Yeah.
What new product or new to you product have you found that was just like, oh, wow, this is cool?
Oh, man. There's, there is some within the hangars, there's some flight simulator stuff and it's like sensory overload out here. There's so many different things. You walk and there's a booth on, headsets. And then the next booth over is on, engine parts. And it's such a diverse selection of things to go see and interact with, people to talk to. So I wouldn't say there's just one thing. I mean, it's just all awesome to see.
and a divergence, like the next booth over is the official Bahamas saying, come fly into the Bahamas.
Exactly.
You're
like,
right. What?
Yeah, exactly right. And we work a little bit with them just making sure that people know how to transit the air defense intercept zone, identification zone, excuse me, going to and from if you want to fly your aircraft from Florida to the Bahamas or wherever.
Right, but they actually have a booth here encouraging people to come out.
The tourism is alive and well there, yeah.
And there's some individuals, a couple of individual states have, you know, come fly in our state.
Absolutely, yeah.
My first time here, I thought that was kind of a surprise that they were actively coming and saying, come get us.
Definitely. I think a lot of, you know, post-COVID world and trying to get everything back up and running and everything, I think you probably see maybe more of that than normal, but again, first time, so I'm not really sure.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, and I'm going to put in for that is that for me personally, this has been just a life-recharging last two days because I can't tell you, I got stuck in the booth, you know, stuck. You know, I had to actually do my, you know, what they pay me to come here, work the booth. And that was I really enjoyed that. But then today was kind of my play hooky day, and I ran around. And I swear I couldn't go half an hour with somebody going, hey, Launchpad, you know, a friend that I know who I only meet here or at one of the other, you know, at Oshkosh, that were calling me out going, oh. You know,
yeah. All those reunions, if you will, are very magical. Just, yeah, very magical.
You know, there's a phrase that we say is that the first year you go to the big ones, Oshkosh or Sun and Fun, you go for the airplanes. The second time, you go for the people.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's the relationships that you develop, which become, in many cases, lifelong. But listen, Launchpad, I think we should announce the winners of the Moto Art Contest. And we'll do that right after the break. But just to set it up, back in episode 644 of the Airplane Geeks podcast, we have a lot of episodes out.
We've been doing this for a while.
Since 2008. But our guest was Dave Hall, who is the co-founder and owner of Moto Art. Now, Moto Art sells really high-end aviation-inspired furniture, also aviation art designs that are constructed from actual aviation parts.
And we're talking executive desks made out of the wings of 747 flaps.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It is. It's beautiful stuff. It's all coming from the boneyard or from aircraft that would be scrapped. But another product line they have is called plane tags. And these are small stamped tags.
You can use luggage tags or keychains.
Right, that are made from the skins of actual aircraft. And they contain on them a lot of information about that specific airplane that they came from. And some of these are some pretty exotic aircraft. So we had a raffle. Dave Hall was kind enough to donate 4 plane tags to our listeners. And we had just a giveaway. Write in, your name gets thrown in a hat, and we pull out 4 names. Well, we've pulled out those 4 names, and we'll be announcing them in just a minute. And talking about the specific plane tags, too, because they're, again, very, very interesting aircraft. And we'll do that coming up. Right after a pretty short break.
You're such a tease.
And welcome back to the Airplane Geeks podcast, live on Sun and Fun Radio. And we'll announce now the winners of our Moto Art Plane Tags giveaway. And we've got 4 of them.
We do. They were so generously given to us, we got 4 of them. And our first one goes to Sammy M., and he's going to get a UH-1.
That's right. Sammy's been listening to the podcast for about a year, he says. And we asked those who were entering into the giveaway to describe their sort of favorite Moto Art item. And Sammy's was the B-52 flap conference table. He said it would make a great centerpiece in the living room. But he notes that in order to accommodate that, he might have to demolish a wall or two to get it in. But anyway, Sammy is lucky enough to get the UH-1 Moto tag.
And our next winner up was Steve Westlund, and he's going to get one of the 747, Boeing 747 tag, and this is coming off of one of the very first Boeing 747s that was given to TWA, or
oh, wow,
purchased by TWA.
Oh, very cool.
And we should mention the source of the skins that are used to create these tags, because an easy or an obvious first question is, why would you cut up the skin of an airplane that might... Well, these are skins that have been removed from the aircraft, either because the aircraft is going to be scrapped or because the skin was used to create a replacement in a restoration. So these tags don't come from cutting up parts that could otherwise be used as parts of an airworthy aircraft. Steve gets the Boeing 747 plane tag. He is a volunteer at Oshkosh, he says. He's a North 40 flight line volunteer, and hoping to meet us at Oshkosh, which, of course, we're planning to be there as well. He's a fairly new listener. He says he's been listening for about a year and a half.
And our next winner is John Roberts, and he gets the coveted BF-109 Messerschmitt.
Now we're talking.
So a BF-109, it's like an ME-109.
And having taken notes when we, historian...
Yep.
Cleared the story on that. BF is a later version, and it's because it stands for Bavarian Flugwerk. und ja, ich spreche Deutsch. Bavarian Flugwerk, when the ME-109, when it got involved. And let's not repeat how the difference between an ME-109 and this, but he's getting a genuine skin off of a BF-109. And the cool part about it is the tag you get with it, or the placard, it comes with a cardboard thing that tells you the history of that aircraft, and it actually has got a little safety note on the bottom that says, do not suck on tag, because it's still got original paint and Z-Bart and, hard chemicals on it, so it's like,
not advised.
Yeah. So Steve liked the MD-80 desk. That was his favorite. And let's see, Sammy's, did I mention Sammy's favorite?
The
B-52 flap. Okay, yep. We got it. And Steve's was the MD-80. And John...
Roberts.
Roberts, that's right, sorry. John Roberts, his favorite was the bamboo biplane conference table.
Ah.
That's really a beautiful piece.
It was. I like that one. And our last winner is Jerry Rapp, and he's getting one off of a P-51K.
That sounds amazing.
Nice
that's gonna be. You're gonna want that thing. Yeah.
Jerry's favorite was the fuselage doors.
Yeah, those were kind of weird. I like that though.
Yeah.
Now what's gonna happen is I'll send an email to all of these folks so that they can send me their mailing address.
Right, and then we'll get their plane
and
tags.
We'll get their plane tags out. Look now, if you're listening to us live, hold your horses. I'm at Sun and Fun. I'm not doing emails until I get back. So just, hold your horses. But congratulations to all our winners. And, one of the things that was wild is while we were recording this, the first set of, these are limited sets.
Yeah.
The first P-51, remember we were doing when we were on the show,
right.
I was sitting on eBay watching one go for over 19. $1,900.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, these are collectibles. People collect
these.
They become
that. Yeah.
There's a big business in display cases made for these, apparently. So, yeah, we want to thank MotoArt for donating these for our listeners. They're of course at MotoArt.com, MOTOART.com. But there's also a website for the plane tags. If you're interested in checking those out, that's at PlaneTags.com.
So, and as a guest. No, you can't have one.
I was really hoping you were going to throw in my way, but I understand.
It was all that we could do to give away the four that we got because the co-hosts were more than eager to arm wrestle over them, ourselves.
But this was our biggest one ever. How many, we had? This was our largest.
Yeah, yeah. I don't remember the number right now, but yeah, we've done giveaways before, and this was by far and away the largest participation.
Right, because this is like we had double the number of entries that we've had for any other for our other previous ones.
Yeah.
So, you know, congratulations to our winners, and you know, listen to us for more to come. We might we'll worm something out. You know. You know, we'll
we talk, like giveaways.
Yeah, we'll talk to Boat about giving away maybe a free intercept.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A lifetime experience.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Once, experience, once in a lifetime.
Only once.
Once in a lifetime.
We'll give away a free intercept.
Yeah.
Well, I think we'll start to wrap things up. But first, Launchpad, you flew your Focke-Wulf in for the event. Tell folks what model that is. A little bit about the history really quickly.
Right, real quickly. I've got a Focke-Wulf 149 Delta. And real quick, let's set up the scenario of why. This is not a Reichs airplane. This is a Bundestag airplane, which means I'm a West German part of NATO airplane. You know, I want to make sure everybody understands the difference.
Yeah.
And the quick history was, after the war, of course, Focke-Wulf was, you know, like all the German industries, was in, you know, nothing left, bombed level. They kind of rebuilt, and in 1951, they started making gliders and a single motor airplane. Meanwhile, we got to tag this to history. In 1955, the British, French, and U.S. sectors formed the West German government, the Federal Republic of Deutschland. And the Russians, being not cooperative, then formed the DDR. West Germany joined NATO in 56. If you're going to be part of NATO, you've got to have an air force. So they stood up the Luftwaffe again. And the reason it's still called the name of the army changed, the name of the navy changed, but Luftwaffe of Deutsch is generic for air force, and all the other titles just sounded silly, forced, dumb.
Sure.
So, but then, to bring it back, the Luftwaffe then issued an RFP for a trainer because the U.S. Air Force had issued them T-6s to try and stand back up. You know, they had nothing, so they got old T-6s that were now 10 years past their prime.
Yeah.
And they also were getting some fighters that were coming out of they were flying an Italian, and they... You know, rid their whole program. So this was the first RFP to get a trainer aircraft.
So, Launchpad, how did you end up with this?
Okay. How I ended up with this is I knew of the aircraft, and I was doing what you're not supposed to doing. I was trolling on Trade-A-Plane and Controller.com. You know?
And you found it there.
I found it there. I found it on Controller.com.
It was in Canada, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. There's a guy who was restoring them. I found it in Canada, and as we documented in episodes 571 through 568 through 573, you know, we went through the decision process of looking the man in the mirror and having a conversation with, you know, the man in the mirror, your checkbook, and then bringing the wife into it and having a conversation with her and looking at it and then deciding that, yeah, this is the plane, it's going to meet our needs. But I had to buy it in Canada and go through the import process of bringing it in. That's all well documented in our other episodes. So now I have it. It's U.S. registered. Bringing it in through Customs and Border Patrol was fun. Speaking of which, you're at Sun and Fun. Look what's just driving by. You know, a Willie's Jeep with a vehicle mounted, driven by two Rosie the Riveters. But so I have it here. It's a four-person aircraft.
And it's gorgeous. It's in its original paint scheme.
Right. It's been repainted. Now it's been.
But it's got camouflage. It's got the Iron Cross. It's got
right, and it's got still the serial numbers on it that were when it flew for the Luftwaffe.
Okay.
Wow.
All right. It's very cool. If you haven't seen it, get out there to the Warbird line.
Yep.
And take a look. And if Launchpad's there, he'll tell you lots more about it. But there is a good information plaque there.
And it's the best of both worlds because I get almost all the same coolness as boat flying as F-16 in, but it's practical because it's at the expense, you know, the same cost as a beach bonanza.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
And it's practical because I have 1,300 pounds of usable load, you
wow,
know.
Wow.
And,
goodness.
You know, how much usable load you get, you know, for F-16. Personal stuff in the F-16?
Not as much.
Not as much.
Not as much.
All right. Well, we want to thank you for listening to the Airplane Geeks podcast. We especially want to thank our guest, Boat. Tell us again where folks can go to learn more about what they should know about.
Absolutely. Yeah, so obviously check your NOTAMs baseline there, but for all the additional information, you can go to www.norad, so that's NORAD.MIL/general aviation.
Terrific, and you can find us at airplanegeeks.com. So thanks for listening.
I hope you enjoyed listening to this live radio version of the show. Doing something like this gives you an appreciation for those who live in the live broadcasting world. And thanks to Lieutenant Colonel Trevor Boswell for joining us, and to Sun and Fun Radio for giving us the opportunity to record the show live. You can listen to all the interviews from the 2021 Sun and Fun Aerospace Expo on liveatc.net/SNF. And that's 24/7, 365. We appreciate liveatc.net for supporting the Sun and Fun Aerospace Expo. Our website is airplanegeeks.com, and our email is thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. Bye, everybody, and thanks for listening.